This podcast is brought to you by WCRFM in Wolverhampton.
Our Earth Week on WCRFM with Paul Dark. Interviews from Wolverhampton's WCRFM 101.8, Our Earth Week of shows, with local businesses, Marston's, Wolverhampton Homes and Total Energy, and how St Edmunds School won a Premier League environmental competition, along with the everyday realities of living environmentally in and around Wolverhampton. This podcast ends with a discussion led by WCRFM's legendary Chris Allen with Our Earth presenter, Dr. Paul Dark, and Councillor Claire Dark, a regular volunteer at the Smethstow Valley. Alex Rollinson, who is the Marston's Energy and Waste Coordinator. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So we're going to talk about what Marston's do to make the world a better place and hopefully make their business a better business as well.
Yeah.
So as the Energy and Waste Coordinator, what's your job involved?
Yeah, no, great question. So I'm for our managed retail and franchise pubs, my main part of the job is looking after energy and waste measures and sustainability practices that they can bring in and how they can operate, as you've said, to make them a better business, but also very important on our agenda to make sure that they're the most sustainable practices they can be.
Can you give us a little clue of what, if you go into a pub, what might you see and what might you say you should do this, you should do that, or you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, the first thing, so waste is a big thing on my agenda. I look after waste. And I mean, a big thing is segregation. I mean, we have contractors set up for food and...
When you say segregation, that doesn't sound good to most people.
Oh, sorry.
So you probably need to unpack that.
Well, just to unpack, simply separating your the materials in what you're throwing away into separate waste bins, effectively. So food bins, glass bins, your general waste, which is the bin you don't want to use, you want to use only at the last resort.
Yeah.
So your dry mix recycling. So your food, your dry mix, then your glass. They're the best ones, and it's about making sure we make that work for our pub managers and also that then what's happening to them is sustainable.
Right. And so what other kind of things do you go into a pub and say, you know, perhaps we could do this, do that, apart from the bins?
Yeah, well...
the bins are very important.
Yeah, they are. Well, it's an integral part of the business, even though we will try to hide them behind a wall. But I mean, it's as simple as the lighting. I mean, about two, three years ago, we made sure that all the lighting in, so when you walk into a pub, all the lighting in there is LED. I mean, again, it's good for the business because we're consuming less electricity because all those filament bulbs previously were burning so much more energy when it wasn't necessary.
And so when you say good for the business, I mean it's saving them money. It's cheaper to run more environmentally friendly lighting, etc. So also tell us about your offices, because you've got the two main offices in Wolverhampton, the one in Chapel Ash and the one in St George's. Are they the height of sustainability?
So Marston's house on Chapel Ash, so it actually belongs to Carlsberg Marston's, who are they're the brewing side of the business actually left Marston's PLC and joined Carlsberg, so they're headquartered there. Mm-hmm. We got kicked out, so we needed a new home, and our new home's St John's House in St John's Square. Mm-hmm. It meant we could build it from the ground up with sustainability in mind. So it's entirely electric powered, so there's no gas going into there. And we made that decision because one of the key things we wanted to do was bring all our training in. So we've got a completely electric training kitchen. The key thing for that is that's the kitchen of the future in our pubs. Like, we want that, that's where we see it going in our pubs. So we wanted to make it completely electric. So pub managers coming in to train on it, we'll see, this is the kit that you'll be using eventually. And the reason we see it as the future is because, I mean, the government plan is electrification. If we can get all the kit electrified, then all we have to do is make sure renewable capacity in the back end is good enough, and then that can power everything. And so a key thing for us with our offices, we see renewable generation as that's what we want to get next. So we're looking at potentially getting, you know, a big array of solar panels on the roof so that we can take, so, and that would cover all of our energy generation on site. So mm-hmm. you know, that's huge, preventing that potentially wasted electricity. That energy can go somewhere else.
So how are your, do I call them landlords or tenants, or what do they call
yeah,
them?
Yeah, well, we have a mixture. So we have 1,400 pubs. It's a mixture of managed pubs. So these are pubs where we have a manager in there, and we tell them from the ground up, this is what we want you to run. We have retailers. So these are people who, they're like a franchisee, so they essentially, we give them all the support and all the practices and supplies that they can use to support their business. And then we have the classic sort of tenanted division, who they would be. But yeah, essentially anyone, if you're running a pub, you're a landlord in my book.
And is there any reluctance on the part of your tenants, whatever, to become more environmentally friendly, or is it fairly easy when you explain the business benefits of it?
I think, oh no, absolutely. I mean, everyone's different, to be honest. But if I generally, when I've spoken to these guys, when you extol the virtues of it, absolutely, they're normally always on board. Everyone, you know, nobody wants to be going against the grain intentionally, like going against the grain is the wrong word, but doing the wrong thing shows mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be doing the wrong thing intentionally. So when you explain, like, look, this is the best way to operate, this is how we've made it work in our pubs, most of the time they're on board. But with a lot of what we do, we've always tried to do it as, how can we do it practically, and how can we do it in a way that benefits? So most of the time when we're telling our tenants, we're mainly telling them, here's how you can do your business better. Mm-hmm. And you know, at the end of the day, we're in the business of running a successful business, but also making sure that our tenants have as much success as possible as well. You know, mm-hmm. that's a key driver for us. We don't just want to stick people in pubs and have them pay us rent. We want them to have successful businesses.
Absolutely, because you know, a lot of pubs are disappearing over the last 10-15 years, so it's a big issue. So do you all have electric vehicles?
We don't know. As much as I'd love one to get one myself, no, we don't yet. But I mean,
that's a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And a big thing for us is we're rolling out EV chargers on our estate. We've currently got 176 sites with EV chargers, and we've enabled 40 million miles already with those chargers.
So EV chargers, by that you mean where you can go and plug it in at the pub?
Yeah, absolutely. Electric vehicle chargers. Yeah,
and you still pay for that electricity though when you're charging.
Yeah, so we work with a partner. So we work with a partner called Osprey. So Osprey come and look at our pubs and go, we think we could do an EV charger here. There's capacity here, and essentially we work with them to get those charges in the ground up, from the ground up, supporting that infrastructure. Osprey work with Octopus, so all the energy they use to power these vehicles as well is from renewable sources.
And you've won awards, I hear, for all the work that you've been doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whilst we don't do it for the awards, it's nice for the recognition, and to see where we, you know, to see where we stand sort of amongst our peers as well. So the big ones we won back in 2018, we made sure that all of our waste, we were a zero waste to landfill business, so that's a government standard, and we made sure that we adhered to that back in 2018. And a lot of the awards we won were back then. So like we won a footprint award, several footprint awards, and I think we won an ED award as well. Sorry, I don't know them off the top of my head.
An ED award?
Yes. Yeah,
so that doesn't sound good. That's the kind of thing my mother would have accused me of when I was a child.
No, it's EDI.
EDI, right. Not ED. And so this zero to landfill, how does that work? Because surely you must throw stuff away eventually.
Oh, absolutely. So it's a common misconception that landfill is like, when you say landfill, you're talking about what goes in your bins. No, so what we do is our general waste, we can make sure that 99% of it goes to energy recovery. So like general waste is the worst bin. We don't want to be using general waste. But if we are going to be using it, let's at least make sure that we're doing it as responsibly as possible. And the most responsible way is to make sure it goes to energy recovery. So you're at least putting energy back onto the grid. So that waste becomes energy.
How would that happen though? What would you do to produce that?
Oh, it's essentially it goes to a sorting facility. Anything that can't be recycled goes into a vat, and it's most of the time it is burnt. So it is burnt,
and the energy off of that.
Yeah, so they use that to power a turbine and generate electricity in that way.
So what kind of figures do you have, if you do? You know, this is just because you're explaining to someone who knows nothing. You must recycle an awful lot of glass.
Yes. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you have any kind of figures on that?
Oh, I wish I'd prepared them, but I mean...
Because that would be a great answer.
It would. Because it must be
millions and millions of bottles.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, given that I have trouble putting one bottle in a recycle bin.
Well, when you look at our recycling rate, it's the main element. I mean, we're talking at least 2,000 tonnes, and that's a year.
2,000 tonnes.
Yeah, and that will vary, you know, depending on how well we've done on a year and things like that. Like COVID, we had barely any, but yeah, back to 2000, so I'm happy to say that.
So are you focusing on trying to be an entirely glass-based kind of provider for your drinks and whatever so that you can eradicate plastic?
We are looking at how we can package things better, absolutely. Mm. I mean, there's advantages glass provides that sometimes plastic doesn't provide. I mean, if nothing else as well, just look at taste. Mm-hmm. We are looking at things like, you know, aluminium is a lot easier to recycle in certain areas. So is this a product we can look at and go, right, we'd prefer that in aluminium. If nothing else, from a carbon perspective, you make all those products lighter. You can transport the same amount of beer, but because it's in aluminium rather than glass, it's lighter. But then there's benefits because glass is, we can make sure the economy for the recycling of glass is good. So, I mean, the drink side of the business is Carlsberg Marston's now. Mm-hmm. So we are talking to them about sort of how they can do things better. And Carlsberg have already done quite well with things like getting rid of the plastic on their cans, getting the glue tags and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we are looking at where we can do that better. One thing we're looking at the minute is sort of we're trying to identify where materials... So where we hand recyclers materials and they go, that's rubbish plastic. We don't want that plastic. It's horrible for the supply chain. Like, we can't recycle that the way you want us to recycle it. We're trying to get that information and then give that back to suppliers so that they can look at their base and go, we're going to make that better. We're going to switch to LDPE of this makeup so that...
LDPE, come on.
Low density polyethylene, sorry. Yeah, if I'm boring you with all these acronyms, punch me. Essentially better materials.
So trying to be a kind of leading organisation and business, you're also affecting suppliers and producers in how they behave to make the whole supply chain from beginning to end kind of more profitable because it's better and it's environmental and more eco-friendly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is it. We'll talk to suppliers and we'll go, I mean, the first thing we want to know is, we see this as better, why aren't you doing this? And if the answer to them, and if they say to us it's the cost, then I mean, it's not ideal, but we can then look at that and go, okay, well, let's look at the benefit of that. Let's go, right, well, if that is the nut and we can't action that because of cost, what can we push in the back end to bring that mm-hmm. cost down? Who else can we speak to? Can we create a partnership with a recycler to try and bring that forward? So yeah, we're trying to look at that. I mean, a big thing for us is all our food waste and all our used cooking oil for the managed retail and franchise pubs. We make sure it all goes to a company called Olico because they're a provider we're really happy with. They make sure all of our used cooking oil is converted into biodiesel, and then that eventually goes back into trucks to fuel, and that's a much more less carbon intensive fuel for those vehicles, and all of our food waste then goes to anaerobic digestion, so another form of energy. So that's essentially you let it go off and it releases biogas, and then you use that biogas to...
And I presume this brings in income as well for you as well.
So the food waste,
you don't just like give them the food oil, they buy it, is that how it works?
It depends on the market, to be honest. So for the food, we don't get any money back for it. I mean, the main thing for us is it's a trusted supplier, and we know that we can what we're saying can happen with it, that's the right thing that should be done with that food waste. The oil, yeah, we do get a little bit of money for the oil because the oil market is better. I mean, as people have probably heard, but unfortunately it means there's used cooking oil gets stolen, and it's like,
absolutely,
so that tells you all you need to know about
black market in cooking oil.
Yeah, this is it, the seedy underworld. But yeah, we do get a little bit of money for it. But it's about making sure, again, that's more sustainable for us. And by doing that, we can make sure that that money goes into sustainable initiatives and it fuels those. So brilliant for me.
Brilliant. One final question. So what's the next big, bold move for what you're doing for the business?
Well, probably the biggest one, and it's certainly very much on my agenda, is we've got a huge target of reducing our food waste by 50%. And that's versus 2019, so pre-COVID, because we have really good data for food waste in there. And it's about, yeah, looking internally at us and going, how do we stop that going in the bin in the first place? Which, I mean, I've done quite a lot of work with making sure when the waste goes in the bin, it goes to the right place. But before it gets to the bin is a lot harder, so it's quite ambitious, and we're looking at how we can do that. We're partnered with we've already started partnering with Too Good To Go, who are a food redistribution company, and they look at, so we've got them in our carvery sites at the minute. So at the end of the day, when the carvery deck's coming to a close and they're going, oh, we've got all this turkey and gammon, which that's got to go somewhere, we can make sure that's mealed up and Too Good To Go then help us redistribute it. And
right. So that's the big thing coming.
Well, that's one of the ways we're delivering it, but the big thing is let's reduce that food waste, and probably on supporting that as well is let's get to our net zero targets, carbon net zero targets.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been brilliant.
In the studio with me is, I'm glad to say, Simon Bamfield from Wolverhampton Homes, one of WCRF's primary patrons. Thank you for being here, Simon.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about Wolverhampton Homes and what they're doing to make Wolverhampton better as a city, both for its own citizens and the rest of us.
We've got a range of initiatives, like many organisations up and down the country. We're doing things to improve the amount of energy we use, the amount of recycling that we undertake. So, for example, we're starting to use more of a greener fleet. So, the vehicles you'll see on the roads are now electric vehicles in many cases. Unfortunately, not all cases that's suitable. If they're carrying heavy loads and things like that, then they still need to be diesel. And lots of recycling within the offices, but particularly on our construction projects. 99% of the waste that's produced from those activities is diverted away from landfill, so it goes into recycling. So offcuts of wood become future doors and things like that. So there's a whole range of things that we do around that type of activity. And we've got lots of large projects on the go, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. We've got EV charging, electric vehicle charging. We're starting to introduce some communal facilities around the city, both to support our fleet deployment and for people to utilise, subject to sort of signing up to that. And there's a range of other things we've been doing. We've had some small flood mitigation schemes where we've been investing and protecting properties from the impacts of climate change. And we're doing a lot of work, particularly at the moment, around retrofit, which is the government's fancy title for making homes far more energy efficient and improving both the insulation and the heating within those properties.
And how is that kind of working? Is it kind of like really successful, and are your tenants really appreciating what you're doing?
Well, we've got a scheme at the moment where we're focusing on the what are called either non-traditional or system build housing. So this is the stuff predominantly built through the 1950s and early 60s. So in that post-war demand for housing, so they used industrialised types of housing. So we've got some steel frame systems, some concrete forms of construction, which were great at the time. They built homes very quickly, but those homes are very inefficient and very difficult to heat, and therefore very cold, very drafty. So we've been going along, spending quite significant, many millions of pounds, improving those, insulating them, putting new windows in, new roofs in some instances, and had really, really happy feedback. So they're well-designed, well-thought-through solutions. We're using what's called PAS 2035, which is the government's essentially best practice for doing this sort of design activity. So looks to ensure there's no unintended consequences, like damp and mould increasing because you're reducing the amount of warm air that escapes the property, and then if you're trapping that in, then you get mould. So it's dealing with all those issues so that the house is improved holistically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the feedback we've had from the first phases have been excellent. So some very happy people. Lots of photo ops with the mayor and people like that. So it's gone down very, very well. So, and that's on some houses. We've also got work happening on tower blocks as well, which is the other end of the spectrum. And we've got some work down on the Heathdown estate at the moment where we're doing similar sorts of activities. So lots of external insulation being put on, and I'll probably just chuck in at that point that that's all non-flammable insulation.
Of course.
So all mineral wool that's being utilised to ensure that there's no fire safety risk being created as a consequence of that activity. And we're dealing with the ventilation as well, so improving significantly the performance of those buildings and also the look of those buildings. And so work at Heathdown starting, and then we've got schemes starting in 2024 on the Vauxhall Estates and also down at Boscobel, which will include the introduction of new district heating schemes.
So what's the next big thing that you're planning then?
Well, this is it. We've got
perhaps that we don't know about, and you're going to tell us.
Okay, so we've got at Heathdown, we're moving. Heathdown has an existing district heating network, which essentially pushes hot water around the estate to provide heat to each of the dwellings, and that's going to move to a low carbon solution. So it's going to be driven by air source heat pumps, and have what are called thermal stores. So it essentially will be going from a gas producing or use a gas fueled system to a brand new state of the art system that's being installed. So that will generate a much more effective use of that energy
and reduce people's bills.
Absolutely. So that's the plan.
Thank you for coming on, telling us all this information. Absolutely great stuff, and it's good to see Wolverhampton Homes leading the way in making better for their citizens and better for the people of Wolverhampton.
I'm Rosemary.
And I'm Mike Fox.
You're not from Wolverhampton, but you've lived here for an awful long time.
We have, yes.
And one of the reasons we've got you on the show today is because you're exemplars of modern environmental living, in that you've got an electric car, solar panels, and you're vegans?
Vegetarians. Yeah.
So we're going to talk a bit about that, the practicalities of having an electric car. Let's start with that. Is it a good thing, and why did you do it?
Well, it's a good thing from the point of view of not burning fossil fuels and producing carbon dioxide all the time and all the everything that comes out of the exhaust pipe. And it's very quiet. It runs just like a normal car, really, except there aren't any gears.
There's no gears. No,
well, there is. There's a fixed gear from the electric motor to the wheels.
So they're all like automatics, basically.
So there's no need for a clutch. So it's always in the same gear.
Right. I didn't know that.
Did you not?
I did not. No. So I haven't got an electric car, and I'm ashamed to admit I've got a diesel, but I am trying to get rid of it. So that's the key.
And the current vehicle we have is a Nissan Leaf, and it has what they call an e-pedal. Mm. So you can drive it just using one pedal.
Right.
So if you take your foot off the pedal, then the braking will take place as you recharge the battery, regenerative braking.
So I take it costs more than an average car, but it's much cheaper to run.
Well, it depends on the cost of electricity, which, of course, has risen recently. Mm. But in principle, yes. We've had one for 6 years or so now, and we've got quite used to it. But the first car we had a battery of 30 kilowatt hours, and we had another one in between. But we've now got 60 kilowatt hours, so we can go twice as far, which is much better.
And how far is that in practical terms?
Well, it depends on whether you go in the summer or the winter, really.
That makes a difference.
It does, a big difference.
Really?
Yes. In the summer, we can get up to about 250 miles. Mm. In the winter, that drops to about 180.
I haven't seen that in the adverts, to be fair.
No.
And why is that? Do you know why that is? Because that's a,
it
that's...
must be the operating temperatures and so on, but affecting how the battery works.
And so, is it much more expensive to buy an electric car? But would you recommend it?
Well, it depends a bit on how you buy it, I suppose. We have a contract with the garage, so we're paying monthly.
It's like a lease.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's our car and we've bought it, but we're paying back a loan all the time.
And so have you ever been on a really long journey where you've had to charge it midway through a lot of services?
Yes.
And how long does that take? Because I always think one of the things why people don't want particularly get an electric car is you get to a service station, in the moment you fill up with petrol and it takes a minute. You know, how long does it take to sort of charge at a service station?
Well, we found that it takes about probably half an hour or three quarters of an hour if you get a fast charger.
Mm.
And you can just stop there and you can go and have a cup of coffee or something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come back, your car is charged. So it makes you stop, which is probably quite a good thing. If you're going on a long journey, like we go to Edinburgh quite a bit from Wolverhampton, so and back again. So you have to plan your journeys more carefully.
You've never been caught short, as it were, in lacking a charging space, thinking, what are we going to do,
We've nearly got caught short.
We got to Shrewsbury once, and we had to charge up, but the charger was broken. And the phone number on the things, there was nobody there.
So we went down to the burger bar, whatever it was.
Burger King, wasn't
Burger
it?
Burger King, was it?
Doesn't sound vegetarian at all, but we'll pass that
only
one
Only for this reason.
No, but there was a power socket in the hall.
Right.
We asked if we could use it. So we bought
it. You literally plug it in the wall?
Plug it into the wall.
Right.
Yeah, that's right.
So you also carry your own charger?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, you do.
For a three-pin socket, then we have our own lead to use that.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave it's very, very much slower though. You're only charging at 3 kilowatts then,
right.
Whereas the fast charge will be 50 kilowatts.
Right,
it's much bigger, much faster.
So, but do you think that the anxiety people might have about it is probably overstated? But there's a degree of anxiety, surely.
There is. We were probably coming back from Aberystwyth at that point, or Tregaron maybe. And the journey would be about 110 miles. And that was about the range of the car. So we felt we needed to get a bit more into it before we could get home.
Right. And so tell us about, because that's brilliant, but you've got solar panels as well. And you've had them for a long time?
We've had them since 2012.
And tell us about how you decided to get them and why you got them.
Well, I suppose with all these things, we thought it was a good idea. if you can generate your own electricity, then the cost... Well, they've paid them for themselves in 7 years.
Really?
So it's now giving us free money.
We all like free money.
That's
but
right.
They're quite expensive to get in there initially.
Well,
not so much for you, because I know you've had them a while and the government helped you.
They didn't help us with the panels. We bought them ourselves for just over £10,000.
Right.
But we were lucky enough to have the government feed-in tariff running at more or less its highest level at that time. And that was set up to run for 25 years. So we ought to stay, I guess, to get full benefit from it.
Excellent. We were talking about having solar panels and, you know, electric cars. But you're also vegetarian as well. Have you always been vegetarians, or what made you turn vegetarian? Because, you know, we are in vegan month. I know you're not vegans, but we are in that year of the month of veganism. So.
Right. Well, we've been vegetarians for about 30 years now.
Mm-hmm.
My family were not vegetarian, and it was when our younger daughter, at the age of 7, realised that what she was eating had once been running around in the fields, that she was horrified and declared that she wasn't going to eat meat ever again.
Mm-hmm.
And from that point on, I panicked at that point because I thought, how do you bring up a healthy child without any meat? Because that was my mindset at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, I went away and read about it. It was pre-internet. You couldn't look things up very easily, but we did. And one by one, our family became vegetarian. And since that time, we've grown into it more, and all the environmental issues, the planet issues have come more to the fore. And as far as I'm concerned, that's, you know, the way to go.
Because industrial farming is a major contributor to
absolutely
kind of like pollution and climate change, particularly yes. cattle, etc. So, but it was fairly easy, or sort of like a gradual evolution into this.
A bit of both, really. I mean, another aspect of it was definitely, you know, being kind to animals, to put it simply. You know, why I wouldn't want somebody to kill an animal for me. I wouldn't want to do it myself. And there are so many alternatives, and you can live a very healthy life as a vegetarian. So, you know, why have meat? And, you know, so many forests are cleared so that cattle can graze there and cattle feed can be grown. All sorts of, lots and lots of reasons why a vegetarian diet is a good one. And not, you don't have to be completely vegetarian, but just reducing on meat is good. It's good for your health as well.
And how do you suffer being a vegetarian?
I don't think I do, really.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
And another aspect of being vegetarian is that eating plant-based materials is much more efficient use of the land than having cows roaming about and then having your grass second-hand, as it were.
And so, but you're also Quakers.
Yes.
And tell us a bit about that in relation to a kind of commitment to the environment or the earth.
Well, we have what we call testimonies. We don't have a creed, but we do have testimonies to a simple way of life, to truth, to peace, and equality, and the environment. So these are sort of the things which kind of underpin our lives, if you like.
And is that partly why you've committed to kind of like the climate change commitment of not using fossil fuels and that kind of thing?
It is partly. I think that the whole of life, it seems to me, needs to operate in a consistent way. So the faith is one aspect of it, and the way that you do things is another. But they're all integrated, really.
So is your daughter still a vegetarian?
She is.
She's not lapsed.
No, she hasn't.
That's very impressive.
No, and her son is vegetarian, almost vegan, but her daughter is not.
Her daughter is not.
No.
That must make mealtimes very fun,
so it's
particularly when they were young. So, you've lived in Wolverhampton for a long time, and we've changed probably in that period from quite an industrial, dirty city, bad air, to a kind of much cleaner, better place to live. How would you assess those kind of changes over the 40 to 50 years you've lived here?
That's
quite
one.
Difficult, isn't it? I mean, when we first came, I used to drive across town. We live slightly into the countryside. We're not in Wolverhampton as such. We live in Codsall, which is just in South Staffordshire, across the border.
We'll claim it.
All right. but that meant I drove for 20, 30 minutes into my place of work and back out again. As soon as I became operating in the Church of England up in the same town, then I could walk to work, which is much better, really.
So you'd recommend a change of lifestyle for all of us, really, to be more consistent, to make our city better, cleaner and cheaper to some extent.
And I think it's to do with becoming aware as well, becoming more aware of the environment and understanding how everything is actually linked together. And, you know, and opportunities to go and visit the countryside and do things with nature are so really, really important. And I think in Wolverhampton we have a sort of growing number of places where parks and recreation centres, canals. There's a lot in Wolverhampton that we can do. You don't have to go right out to the countryside before you can meet with nature. And that's a very, very important part of life for everybody.
Mm. In fact, there was one time we took the train into Wolverhampton from Codsall. We're lucky to be connected that way. And then we walked home along the canals. And it was lovely. It was almost all green all the way, even though we were walking through Wolverhampton.
Which is what we should all do. Well, thank you, Mike and Rosemary.
Thank you.
We've got an absolute delight in our next couple of guests. They are from St Edmunds. I do have an affection for St Edmunds, I must tell you, because our son went to St Edmunds many, many years ago. And so we're here to talk about your recycle project. So, Abigail, tell us a little bit about the recycle project that you're doing.
So it's by the Premier League, and it encourages all football clubs to be more environmentally friendly and, like, think of an idea to, like, help them do that, and then it's like a knockout stage, and then whichever football club wins, then they win it.
So which football club? I can guess which football club it was, but I'll let you tell us which football club it was, Abigail.
Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Wolverhampton Wanderers. So, Govan, tell us what you had an idea then. Yeah. This was a specific idea. So tell us what that idea was.
So that was to use recyclable products from match days for Wolves to make their shirts that they would wear before the game.
And they've taken this up, have they?
Yeah, and it's taking place in January.
Right, and every St Edmunds pupil gets a shirt as a reward, I hope. I can guess the answer to that as well, but we won't go there. So, yeah. But I hope you two at least get free plastic shirts. So is it plastic? It's a kind of beautiful new version of plastic that's breathable and all that kind of stuff, isn't it?
It's like made from melted plastic into the materials and then made like that.
Absolutely. And so who approached St Edmunds? Was it the football club, or did you come up with the idea, go to the football club, and they bang the idea in to the Premier League?
We had workshops come in from Wolves, and we had two teams from our school, which we went head-to-head, and then we won that. Then we had the project at the actual Wolves against St Peter's, opposite us.
St Edmunds victory there, yeah. That's what I like to hear.
So we won that, and then we got to the next stage, right, which was Aston Villa.
And so perhaps we should explain, because although I know where St Edmunds is, why you are so closely linked to Wolverhampton Wanderers Club. Why is St Edmunds so close to the club?
It's because it's right next to the training ground, and yeah.
It's right next to the training ground. Well, in fact, St Edmunds used to be on the training ground, didn't it? So, because when our son was there, he was the last year in the school as it was before they demolished it to build the football club. We've got a brand new school now, though. Yeah, so it's more perfect than ever. And so, have you continued looking at your work into recycling and environmental projects in class?
Not really.
Not really? Oh, come on. You know, the teachers in the background. Yeah, the answer is yes. You're going to lead the world. You're going to change the world.
We've been taken out probably about a month ago. We got to film a video, and then that gets promoted to the people that do the challenge next year. But it's not about being environmentally friendly. It's about mental health.
About mental health?
Yeah.
Next year's one is about mental health.
Yeah.
Right. And so, well, that's really good. And so what subjects do you do at school?
As in for options?
Yeah.
I do DT and business studies.
DT. So you'll be thinking about recycling within all that as well?
Yeah.
Particularly in design and all that kind of stuff, using recyclable materials.
Yeah.
So what are your options, as they're now called?
Health and social care and sports studies.
Sports studies. So you'll have a degree of awareness, particularly in health and social welfare, because I know that healthcare is a major contributor of waste, and actually thinking of new ways to deal with kind of health waste is really going to be an essential thing for the future. So did you want to tell us where all the information is about the project?
Yeah, if you go onto wolves.co.uk and search for St Edmunds, it will come up with all the information about the project.
Right, and so You when this is in January, is there going to be an event? Is there going to be a big event?
It's at a football match.
At a football match? Yeah. In front of the whole crowd?
Yes.
And you think talking to me is difficult? You actually have to talk to 30,000 people or 40,000 people,
yeah.
Govan.
It's the game against Manchester United in January. That.
Excellent. So an easy win for Wolves then, really. So, yeah, you know, so that should be quite good. Do you like football?
Yeah, I support Wolves.
You support Wolves? So you're from Wolverhampton?
Yeah.
And do you support Wolves?
No.
Who do you support?
Liverpool, but I do like Wolves as well.
I support Liverpool and I don't like Wolves, so yeah, I wouldn't worry about it. Liverpool are the better team, so, you know, we'll see that. So, well, thank you for coming on. It's been a joy to have you here and we look forward to more victories for St Edmunds.
Thank you.
Thank you.
In the studio with me now is Professor Jew Harrison. Do you want me to call you Professor? Do you keep that title still?
We can do an Emeritus Professor.
An Emeritus Professor. Yeah. So what does emeritus mean?
It means you're retired from the university and they've given you this lovely honorary accolade.
You know? Do you still go in and teach?
It's not about teaching. Professors do research.
Researching. Yeah. Do you still go in and do that? Or
I can do. I can.
Right, so we're here because you've gone all kind of environmentally friendly with solar panels, heat pump, electric car.
I don't use a car.
You don't use a car. So you're even more environmental than most people. So.
Possibly.
And you're a vegan.
Yeah, I've been a vegetarian for over 40 years. In the last 10 years, I've been fully vegan.
And we are in World Vegan Month.
Are we really?
Yes, we are. So what made you decide to... Because you were talking earlier to me outside about how lockdown made you rethink how you... see your house?
Well, it's about how I live in my house, I think. I think my job at the university was pretty full on, running research projects, doing some teaching into masters, running whole research groups, working chair of the professoriate. So I was managing all the professors in the university as well as doing my own research. It was lovely, don't get me wrong. But at lockdown, suddenly we didn't go into work. And I was at home, and I haven't been at home for I don't know how long. And I was able to work hours during the day and find that I'd have at least 2 hours in the afternoon often where I could go out for a walk along our gorgeous canals in Wolverhampton. And it was an eye-opener, and I thought, what am I doing with my life? You know, this is quality of life, this, you know, being able to do the work you like and do walking, getting out and about. And so I decided I would go back after we were still after the lockdown. We were still Zooming and, you know, calls, and we didn't really meet people very often. It was so I thought maybe I'll go part time. And then the university brought some schemes out about if you wanted to resign, there was some money there for you too. It was called a mutually agreed resignation scheme. And instead of going part time, I took that, and I thought, that'll be a shock after working 24/7 for so many years. Mm-hmm. So I got myself a puppy, and we were out every day. And then living in my house for that first year, particularly just settling in, and you know, I began to think about the energy bills. I began to think about distance transport. I didn't have to travel anywhere anymore like I did for my job. And I began to think about the money they give me to leave. I thought, perhaps I'll begin to invest in that. This is, in a small way, just a very personal thing. You know, mm-hmm. just if everybody did this, it would be brilliant. But, you know, you don't coerce people. It's just what I did. And I invested the money. I put the money. I think it's an investment for my health and for the future of the planet mm-hmm. and for my children. So I put the money into solar panels for the roof and an air heat pump for the house. For the last year, that's all been rather wonderful, cheaper, very warm house, and I'm really glad I did it.
So tell us about heat pumps. Are they expensive, or did you get a grant?
I did get a grant. I mean, they are expensive things. I mean, mm-hmm. if I hadn't had this big chunk of money, you know, that they'd given me, I would have had to find a different way of doing this. Let's see. At the time, you could get a grant of £6,000 to help with the full cost. But when I looked into that grant, it was only for central hot water, not central heating. So bit pointless, really. It's like a 50-50 halfway house. Mm-hmm. But luckily, just as I was making a decision about all this, the government brought out the new scheme, which is for £5,000, but for the full heating and water system. So, and the energy companies that you work with to install, they're the ones who sort out the government voucher for you. You don't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. And they take that money off the cost of the bill. Mine was expensive. I live in a four-bedroom house, so it's quite a big space to heat. So I'd say it came to about, perhaps the full cost would have been 13,000, but then they take 5,000 off, so it was 7,000 or 8,000 in the end.
And how long do you think that will take to pay for itself in the reduction in bills?
Very soon, I should think. I mean, I haven't worked that out because I'm not doing it for economic reasons.
But equally, you see living in that house as a long-term thing for you as well.
It can be, yes. It's yes, as far as I can, yes. But I wasn't thinking about return of money or financing or anything. I'm not into that at all. It was more about being as green as I possibly can and leaving a little trace on the planet, really.
Right. And the same with solar panels as well. They're fairly recent ones?
Yes, I put them. Well, they went up first and then in perhaps May, April, May, and then the heat pump went into June, July, so it all happened fairly.
And you have a battery with it that stores?
Yes, it comes with a battery. And that's, I don't think I would have done that without the battery. It doesn't make sense to me. Mm. So it means that in the summer, of course, when there's lots of day, they're photovoltaic, so they take it. They don't have to have direct bright sun, but light, you know, the more intense the light, better. So in the summer, they will work really fully. And in the winter, obviously, there's less light. Mm. But it balances out over the year. And there's always, within that, there's export tariffs. So the extra energy you're not using in your house, you can export to the national grid and they'll pay you. You get paid for that. If you get
right. And so this is just part of your personal commitment to the planet, really?
I guess it is, yes. I mean, being a vegetarian years and years and years ago was all part of that. You know, it's about enough food to go around, and pollution and climate change as well coming into play.
So you'd recommend it for everybody?
I would.
If they can, to some extent, if they can afford it.
If the government would support people to afford it, that would be brilliant.
Yes, that would be brilliant. Yes. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming along, June Harrison. Thank you very much.
I'm very glad to say joining me now is Lewis Jackson, who's a customer service advisor with Tomato Energy. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Chris. Thank you for having me in the booth, my friend.
That's OK. Welcome downstairs, I should say, because you're based on the 9th floor of Manda House.
We are indeed, yes.
And I've been coming in here intrigued by, who's this Tomato Energy up on the 9th floor, and now we can find out a little bit more as part of Earth Week.
Well, you know what, I think it's kind of happened at the right time. It's the perfect right time, right place. I think we said the other day, as it has happened on Earth Week. Yeah, we are a green energy company, and we've just released a fantastic new tariff called the Tomatopia tariff.
Yep. So I love the name.
It's a good name, isn't it? It is a good name. I'll let marketing know that as well. So the idea really behind it, we want to put the green foot forward. We want to give the opportunity to getting into solar energy, but not having to pay for it.
Right.
So, and what that means is it's free solar panels, battery and inverter, all for free and installation. And we want to fix your energy for the next 10 years.
You have to keep saying free, because I think I was surprised when we were having a chat about this to find out. And some people have said to you, oh, that's too good to be true. There must be a trick.
It's the usual one, because usually, you know, when you hear free solar panels, you're thinking, go on, how much is it going to cost to get them up
there? How's it going to really cost?
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? But that's about it, really. It is just free. The installation, the boys will be doing the installation, although they won't be trying to pass you a check at the end of it. Like, could you get this signed and sent back to us? No, it is completely free. We just want to make it a more affordable asset for your property, because a lot of people, including myself, with more of a pipe dream than anything to get solar panels on your house. So with this free scheme, it helps the planet and it helps the people, and that's what we're really all about.
I'm going to say, because lots of the other people, you know, around the city would not be able to afford the upfront costs when they have been there for. They may love the idea of trying to save a bit of money on electricity by harnessing the power of the sun.
Well,
but those upfront costs have been a massive barrier to many people.
Yeah, well, the idea, we want to utilise the abundance of power that the sun gives you. There's only so much power and energy we're in this energy crisis that we're in. And essentially all this solar that's, it's just heating up people's tiles, you know, that energy is just, it's just being wasted on top of your roof. So it makes sense to put the panels there and it go into your home. It's a greener, more efficient way of getting your energy.
So you can have three solar panels and batteries, so now you can store it, correct. Make the most of it. It'll all be installed for you. How many solar panels can you have?
So the production is between 8 and 10. If we can only get 8 on there, 8 there will be.
Yeah.
If we can get the 10 on there, I would say you're getting the most of your money, but it's free.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So between 8 and 10, that's the
obviously,
what we'd like.
If you can get 10 on the roof, then
we'll get 10 on there.
And that gives you obviously more power coming through from the sun in that particular way.
Exactly.
And then you've got 10 years of fixed bills.
That's right, yeah. So you don't have to worry about the, because the energy rises, I think we've seen Ofgem released a statement on Sky News saying that the price rises are going again. I won't give the figure because I can't quite remember.
I think it's 5%.
5%, and that's for your gas and electric. And we haven't got a green alternative for gas at the moment. But electricity is something we can do. And that's where we really want to protect people from are the price rises. And after the cap got taken off the last time, I think it was all a bit of a sore subject, and working in energy myself, having to discuss energy at the same day, it wasn't great. But luckily there is now this opportunity that Tomato are giving out to the people as free solar.
No, indeed. And you've got these different tariffs according to the size of your house, really. So that'll help people understand whether it's affordable or not.
Exactly, yeah. You've got the three bands, and it really goes off not what you're paying, but how much you're using. Because affordability is key, and hence the free solar panel scheme that we've put out there and the fixed bills. It is just a better way of paying for your energy.
Indeed. Now, I've seen on your website you can check your ability via a quiz. I've not
you
done
can.
That yet. But it's one of the things you need in that. Do you need to own your own home?
You do need to own your own home. So it has to be, you can have a mortgage, that's fine. You just need to own the property, and that's really about it. And that's about it, to be fair. That's the only criteria that we'll really look at.
So now tomatoes can be green as well, can't they?
That's it.
right, if you want to know more, tomato.energy is the place to go to. And then, as I say, there's an eligibility checker on there, so people can just do a quiz and see if it suits them. And obviously you're in Wolverhampton. Is there a kind of local contact here for people in Wolverhampton?
There is indeed. We are dotted about. We have a stand set up in the Manda Centre. The people that are there are great people, and they're all good, bubbly, energetic people. So and they are more than happy to speak to you. So I know when you see someone at their stand, you want to divert them, but honestly, they'll brighten your day.
Great. And the key thing here for people, to reach Tomatopia, I've got to say it right, is if you see these folks down in the Manda Centre and they're obviously trying to sell, don't be afraid. Actually, they're not trying to sell, they're trying to give it away.
Exactly that. And it's more or less than just kind of like an information hub.
Yeah.
You go chat to them, they'll just see if you're eligible with their iPads. It's all very informal. It's just friendly. It's a nice little chat about green energy, seeing where you are, see if it's a good fit for you. And 9 times out of 10, it is. So just if you see us, come and have a chat. We're more than happy to.
Lewis, thanks very much indeed.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
That's Lewis Jackson from Tomato Energy upstairs. We were intrigued by Tomato Energy, weren't you? You sort of had a quick natter with them for last week as well, trying to get somebody on. It's probably you that introduced them coming downstairs here for me.
Yeah, we met them in the lift. So,
And they were downstairs in the Man Centre as well.
So, they were trying to...
I've rung them up to have a little chat with them as well. So, you know, about actually having solar panels. So that'll be interesting to see how it goes. There are other suppliers, I'm sure.
We have to say
that. Say
there are other suppliers not in this building, but there are other suppliers. But it is get it checked out, because for many people they may aspire to have solar panels, but actually the level of investment, you know, is significant. And people often talk about, well, I got my solar panels put in. I think one of your guests is this week, and it was 7 to 10 years. He said it's paid for itself now, paid back. And sometimes people haven't got that way of cash flow in their lives.
Absolutely.
You need to check out all the costs.
Yeah, you do indeed.
You know, but I think it's going to be the way of the future. I personally think that it won't be long before they develop a tile a roof tile
right.
that is a solar panel. So yeah. instead, you won't have these big panels on your roof. It'll just look like roof tiles.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be inevitable.
They probably exist already, Paula, would you?
Well, I think they do, but I think that unless, till they're used en masse, it's yeah. not economically viable. But,
absolutely.
It's a changing world, and that's a good thing, and it's always changed, and it yeah. will always continue to change.
And the fact we've got batteries now, whereas a few years back, you know, oh no, battery no. Whereas on the continent, batteries, you know, if you're gonna get energy from the sun, let's store it. What a good idea
yeah,
that is!
Yeah, absolutely,
absolutely. So you know, and it's things are changing. You know, and some people think it's too rapidly, others not fast enough. But the point is
oh no, it's exciting. It's yeah. exciting to see where we're going to end up.
It is exciting.
And I loved listening to your guests during the week, and it was this kind of juxtaposition, really, of helping the earth, helping yourself. And some people come at it from one angle. You know, it might be, well, I need to try to have predictable electric bills for the next 10 years, and therefore I'll get some solar panels. For others, thinking, actually, I want to reduce my carbon footprint. I want to do it this way. And so, therefore, whatever angle you come from, it's helping yourself and it's helping the environment.
Well, and also, I think it brings home to you that actually it's little things that you do, but also it's about governments making changes and enabling you to access this sort of thing. And you know, you need the help of government to make that possible, and
put it within reach.
Make those big decisions higher up that enable us to access these sort of things.
All governments, and that's the point. It's all governments. It's not any particular brand or side. It's kind of like it becoming a universal thing. And we've got COP coming up, and that's the key thing. I think you're going to have another 10, 12 days of what will end up being an overpowering kind of pressure of what's happening in the environment. But, you know, there's little things that come out of it, government commitments, and it's about us all keeping an eye on that, because often it includes opportunities for us as individuals in Wolverhampton, different schemes that come on to deliver different commitments from different governments to be able to go, yeah, that's good for me. And so it's the big impacting the little that makes a difference in our daily lives, and that's the key, I think.
No, indeed. I was going to ask you about COP, you know, what your hopes were, because, you know, these are really significant gatherings.
Absolutely. Well, I think Conference of the Parties, you know, got to remember that's what it stands for.
Absolutely.
Which is a really weird name, but I think I think what some of their priorities this year are about making what is the changes that are required are going to happen quicker. And I think that's its priority, as well as keeping people to their promises, people, governments to their promises. But I think it's more about that information getting out. It was in Glasgow last year, so we had an awful lot of it.
It was two years ago,
because I think it was in Egypt last year. And it's in Dubai this year. And I think next year it's in Australia, as we were talking about Australia earlier. Mm. So, and I think there's going to be a lot of stuff coming out of it. Obviously, stuff that will be, as individuals on a kind of community level, will seem to be irrelevant. But these things trickle down. And I think, you know, we are going to cut back on fossil fuels. We are going to increase solar and wave and wind. And so it's keep your eye on the ball.
Indeed. And you know, finally, thank you both for all the hard work you put in.
Thank you for listening. Join us on WCRFM 101.8, also available on DAB Radio, every day across Wolverhampton. If you are making a difference, let us know. Check out the website www.wcrfm.com. I've been Paul Dogg, and will, hopefully, continue to be so.
For more information about WCR podcasts, go to wcrfm.com/podcasts.